Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Why is there so little Western news coverage of the continent of Africa? You know what happened in Rwanda, you know what happened in Sudan, and you know what has happened with the countries involved in the Arab Spring. But why isn't there more coverage of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which has been in a state of turmoil for as long as anyone can remember? It's the 12th largest country in the world in terms of area. We're going to talk to an MTSU student who is concerned about this issue and get her take on what's going on there and what, if anything, the non-African world can do to help. And we'll hear more about that right after we hear this from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Rebecca Foote has been elected Outstanding Professor in the MTSU Jennings A. Jones College of Business for the third time in 4 years. The Department of Accounting instructor was again voted by students for the honor in an election sponsored by the university fraternity Gamma Iota Sigma. Foote received the same honor in 2009 and 2010. And the P.B. Edmonds Farms, located in Gibson County, has been designated as a Tennessee Century Farm, according to the Center for Historic Preservation at MTSU. The Century Farms program recognizes the contributions of Tennessee residents who've owned and kept family land and continuous agricultural production for at least 100 years. For MTSU News anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Beatrice Gadabuke, welcome to MTSU on the Record.
Thank you, Gina.
You are a native of Rwanda.
Yes, I was born and raised in Rwanda, and we settled in Nashville, Tennessee in 1995.
And what is your interest in Congo as opposed to your own homeland of Rwanda? Not that you're not concerned with your country of origin, but you have a special interest in Congo. Why?
As a Rwandan genocide survivor and civil war survivor, and someone who has lived in the Democratic Republic of Congo as a refugee, I feel like the conflict that's going on there needs to be brought to the forefront of our media and our people in the United States so that we can talk about it and provide solutions that can bring about an end to the conflict that has engulfed the whole region, the Great Lakes region of Africa, and has seen so much instability and death and mass atrocities. I think that because I have seen it firsthand and lived it, I should be talking about it. I should be speaking for those who cannot speak for themselves.
Would you go into a little bit more detail about your own personal experience?
I was in Rwanda in 1994, and I survived the genocide and the war that was going on at the time, with people hunting and killing and the bombs and the machetes and all of that. And I found myself in the Democratic Republic of Congo as I was fleeing the violence. And while I was there, it was such a hard situation to be in, a very terrible situation to be in for that matter, because there are no resources available to help people that are going through these sufferings. You were kind of left on your own to kind of find your own way to survival.
Now, I know in the Sudanese refugee camps prior to the establishment of the country of South Sudan, the rape was a way of life anytime a woman would go in the refugee camp to the well to get water. Was that also a danger in the Congo refugee camps?
The thing about Congo, yes. Rape has been used as a weapon of war. This is a place where it's said that it's the worst place for a woman to be. This is a place where every hour 48 women are raped. Women are raped, abducted, and turned into sex slaves. So yes, rape is very, very, very present in this conflict.
How did you escape?
By the grace of God, by the help of ordinary people that lent a helping hand as I was struggling to really make it over, my family played a very important role in helping me get away from that. But outside of that, just ordinary people that are in the suffering with you that will look outside of their own suffering and lend you a helping hand.
How do you, would you compare the situations in Rwanda and Sudan and Congo? Are they all comparable situations in terms of the grief and strife? Are they equally intense? Are they equally heinous? Are they all on a par with each other, or are there unique things about each situation that make them different?
I would say that for the most part, they are similar. When you look at Rwanda and you look at the Sudan and you look at the Congo, there's a recurring theme of war, and within that war, the country experiences a genocide. That is the recurring theme in those three countries. But what's different about the Congo is that the Congolese conflict itself has claimed more lives, 10 times more lives than Darfur in Sudan. To kind of even shed more light on that, in October 1st, 2010, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights released a report. And this report of the mapping exercise that documented the most serious violations of human rights and international humanitarian law committed within the territory of the Democratic Republic of Congo between March 1993 and June 2003. And this report talks of a possible genocide. It talks about massacres that, if proven before a competent court, could be characterized as crimes of genocide. So when you think about the Congo and you think about Rwanda and you think about Darfur and Sudan, you notice that there is a war going on. There are mass atrocities. There are people that are displaced and just heinous crimes that are committed.
We're talking about a country where the majority of people are poor, hungry, ill-educated. We're talking about a country that is two-thirds the size of Western Europe. You mentioned the extraordinary rape problem. According to a BBC report, which attempts to analyze whether Congo is a failed state, one senior UN official has called Congo the rape capital of the world.
It's definitely troublesome, and it's unfortunate that these crimes have perpetrated against the Congolese women. In my mind, women are pillars of our society, and I think it's really important that we protect them and that we stop crimes such as this from happening anywhere in this world.
We'll take one brief break, and we'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
Specialized training in forensic science prepares tomorrow's professionals through the Forensic Institute for Research and Education, or FIRE. The Forensic Anthropology Search and Recovery Team assists law enforcement with skeletal remains at crime scenes. Legendary forensic scientists provide lectures free to the public, and high school students work realistic crime scenes each summer at our CSI MTSU camp. I'm Dr. Hugh Berryman, Director of FIRE.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Our guest is Beatrice Gatabuke, who is a native of Rwanda and an MTSU student. What is your major, Beatrice?
My major is economics. I'm actually in the graduate school.
And when do you anticipate getting your master's degree?
In spring 2012.
Good Lord willing and the creek don't rise. Are you going to go for a PhD as well?
That's still under debate. I'm not sure where my journey is going to go from here. But I do see myself pursuing a career in a position where I will be able to hopefully influence policy and bring economic development to the parts of the world that truly need it.
Do you have any specific job or career goals in mind? Working for a government entity, an NGO, private sector? Haven't decided yet?
I have not decided yet. I find it interesting to be able to marry both the public and private sector and come up with something that actually works with both ends of the spectrum to solve some of the economic crises that we've been experiencing. Mm-hmm. Recently.
The statistics that you were mentioning in our last segment, they had to have come from the UN because the government of Congo itself, or it would have to come from a UN or an NGO, because the government of Congo itself, there are parts of the country that don't even have electricity. Computers, forget about it. It's not as though the government was keeping accurate statistics on everything that's going on there. And Congo also has something of a checkered history when it comes to political corruption. True?
The Congo has been historically characterized with weak institutions. It's rich in minerals, and it attracts all kinds of predators.
It has diamonds. It has oil.
Coltan. Tungsten and many, many other, some of them I can't even pronounce.
Well sought after minerals.
Yes.
Lots of minerals.
Yes, lots of minerals and some of them that are really vital to our everyday living. Because of that, when you combine weak institutions and the fact that the country is rich in minerals and attracts all kinds of predators, it becomes really hard for the institutions are in place to really be able to fight for the Congolese people and actually mitigate the violence and everything else that's perpetrated on them.
So the borders of Congo are just kind of porous, and people from the surrounding nations more or less sneak in, usurp the natural resources, and take them back to their own nations and sell them.
The Congolese minerals are highly, highly looted. And I think that comes in a package of many things, including, as I was saying before, weak institutions, where people literally get away with murder. You know, they not only are they killing people, they're also looting the resources, and that becomes very problematic.
Right. Law enforcement and military enforcement lack the resources that they need to deal with the situation.
The structure just isn't is there, but isn't as strong. Mm-hmm. When you look at the history of the country and you look at the former president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Mobutu, this is a president that put personal wealth before the wealth of the country and actually creating institutions that would last and uphold the dignity of the Congolese people. He amassed a great amount of wealth on a personal level.
And he had a lot of time to do it because he ruled for 32 years.
Yes, he ruled for a really, really long time. And in those 32 years, when you look back, there really aren't institutions to really support the potential of the Congo. We're talking about a country that's two-thirds the size of Western Europe and has all these minerals. There really needs to be strong institutions to be able to uphold the country itself.
And the West is said by a great many Africans and historians believed to be somewhat complicit in this because the West supported Mobutu during the Cold War because it was in their strategic best interest to do so. there is an old saying in politics is he may be an SOB, but he's our SOB. And sometimes rich, powerful, industrialized nations back tin horn dictators because even though they don't represent democratic ethics or ideals, they do represent strategic business partners, so to speak.
Well, for the Congo itself in particular, the West generally has supported strong men instead of strong institutions. Mm-hmm. Congo is a perfect example for that. When you look at Mobutu, who ruled for 32 years, he amassed personal wealth but left nothing for the country, or next to nothing for the country.
So it doesn't have a very strong infrastructure. It needs better roads, better bridges, better schools, better everything.
Absolutely.
During the colonial age, it was called the Belgian Congo, and a lot of Africans who rule their own countries, free countries today, resent the whole colonial era because, as you know, the white Europeans thought that they were superior to the Africans, whom they characterized as uneducated savages and thought they knew how to run things better. History tells us that wasn't necessarily the case.
Congo, Rwanda, and Burundi were both colonies of the Belgians. And the history of the Belgians vis-a-vis the Congo is not a great one.
There's a magazine called Foreign Policy, and it has what it calls a failed states index. And they list Congo in the critically failed category. And the only three countries that have worse rankings than Congo on this list are all in Africa. They are Somalia, Chad, and Sudan, back before South Sudan got its independence. Does that surprise you?
They still do have a long way to go. And I think it's going to be really, really important for everyone to play a role in bringing about the change that's needed in the Congo. I think the Congolese people would like to regain sovereignty over their land and, you know, make choices and bring solutions to their own problems.
We'll take one more quick break. We'll be right back with more MTSU on the Record right after this.
The Middle Tennessee Writing Project is a program that fosters the effective teaching of writing to students in kindergarten through high school. The Writing Project hosts annual summer institutes where teacher participants teach and learn from each other. In addition, the Writing Project sponsors summer writers' camps for youngsters. MTSU is one of 185 sites of the National Writing Project and one of only two in Tennessee. This is Dr. Bobby Solley, Project Director.
For more details, visit mtsunews.com.
We're talking about the Democratic Republic of the Congo with MTSU student Beatrice Gadabuke, a survivor of both the Rwandan genocide and a Congolese refugee camp. Do you think there's anything the West can do to help Congo? What should it do? What should the Western nations do?
Well, Western nations do play a key role in the African affairs. Considering to what we were just talking about as far as supporting strong men and not strong institutions, but particularly for the U.S., there is a law that was that's in place within the U.S., and it's a law that was written by actually President Obama, and it's a public law 109456, and this law gives the authority to the Secretary of State to withhold aid to any countries that are deemed to destabilize the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's a very solid law. And I think if the U.S. were to enforce it, we would see major changes within the dynamics of what's happening in the Congo and actually bring an end to this conflict. I mean, we're talking about a conflict that is said to be the second deadliest conflict since World War II.
Is Secretary of State Clinton not enforcing it? Are resources not being withheld from countries that are helping Congo fail?
It doesn't appear to be so. It doesn't appear that this law is actually being enforced. But it would be really important for it to be enforced because it would make a big change.
So as the law reads, it's really up to Secretary of State Clinton.
Absolutely.
To, or the State Department as a whole, and she is its leader, to make the moves necessary.
Yes.
To do this.
Yes.
Is there some kind of an economic boycott that the West could engage in addition to this law, that you think might be helpful?
I mean, I definitely think there are so many perpetrators within the conflict, within the Congolese conflict. And I do think that withholding budgetary aid and imposing economic sanctions on the groups or countries or governments that are actually involved in the conflict and propagate it would be instrumental. So that is something else that Western governments can do.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Sudan, the terrorist gangs, if you will, the Janjaweed, we all know were working with support from the government of Bashir, based in Khartoum, mm-hmm. back when Sudan was one whole country. Is Congo different, or does Congo also have gangs working with government support, or is the violence in Congo of a different nature?
When you reference the UN mapping exercise report, it does name primary perpetrators of the conflict within that country. It names primarily the Rwandan government, the Ugandan government, the CNDP rebels, the FDLR rebels, and to a greater extent, the governments of Burundi, Angola, and Zimbabwe. So those are all players that are named as actors within that conflict. One of the things that's referenced is the war in the early 2000s in the Democratic Republic of Congo that started the scramble for resources within that country. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. The BBC report says, and let me give the name of the man who wrote it. The gentleman's name is Theodore Treffen. He writes, while DR Congo is clearly a failed state, Congolese society has not failed. On the contrary, it is strong, vibrant, dynamic, tolerant, and generous. People have a sense of taking charge of their own destinies. Women form rotating credit systems to compensate for the absence of an accessible banking system. Farmers band together to hire a lorry to get their cassava or charcoal from the central city of Kikwit to market in Kinshasa. So he seems to feel that as many problems as Congo has, it's not a hopeless situation, that this country can be saved. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. I think that the Congolese people can overcome. They've had these things happen to them for a number of years. And I think one of the things that you've seen within the Congolese people themselves is resilience, you know, and the ability to adapt and to want to change their own situation, and which is why I think that it would be really important for anyone who wants to actually make a change within the Congo to look to the Congolese people. What do they perceive their problems to be, and what are the solutions they're bringing to the table to say, well, this is how we think we can solve our own problem? I definitely still have faith in the Congolese people. I think that given the tools and the support, they would definitely overcome and actually decide the course of their country.
One more brief timeout. We'll be right back right after this on MTSU on the Record.
Tennessee's farm families contribute to our state's economy, nutrition, and culture. The Tennessee Century Farms program at MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation acknowledges farms that have been in the same family for at least 100 years. To date, the program has certified more than 1,000 farms. This is Kenita Hankins, director of the Tennessee Century Farms program.
And for all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Talking about the Democratic Republic of the Congo with MTSU student Beatrice Gadabuke, despite the fact that this is a large country with problems that have existed for many, many decades, it doesn't get a great deal of media attention. What do you think is behind that? Why has it not made headlines as often as Rwanda and Sudan and the countries that are affected by the so-called Arab Spring, Egypt and Libya?
I think part of the issue has been the fact that the Congolese mainly speak French in their native languages, and they encounter a language barrier when they're dealing with mainstream media in the United States or anywhere else that they speak English. And because of that language barrier, they haven't been able to permeate mainstream media and actually tell their stories and express what they think. So that's been one issue. Another thing is the fact that mainstream media doesn't think that the average American person or the American people care about what's happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo. But to my surprise, anytime that I've talked to someone about it, anytime that I have attended talks that are talking about the issues of the Democratic Republic of Congo, I've seen people that are interested, that care, that would like to bring a change, that are willing to do something to make a change so that this conflict ends. It's very interesting to see that on a more personal level, to see how people are actually engaged and care. But then mainstream media's assumption is that people don't actually care.
So the American media moguls might not really be in touch with what their own audiences want to see and know about and understand.
That is what it seems like to me, because many people are interested. Many people are surprised that this is going on and they don't get to hear about it. People just don't think such suffering should exist anywhere in the world.
And notice that coverage of the Arab Spring picked up in the West after Al Jazeera was able to get some amazing video from deep within the bowels of the conflicts in those countries. And we in the West, even if it was not on our cable systems or our satellite systems, were able to watch it online on their website. I don't know to what extent Al Jazeera has been covering the Congo. I don't know if you do either. But I know that interest in Rwanda picked up after the movie Hotel Rwanda was released. And I know that interest in Sudan picked up after the actor George Clooney and his father, Nick Clooney, who was a journalist for many years, went to Sudan and made a documentary that was aired on American television. So perhaps Hollywood has to get involved before people come to realize that there's a situation here that needs their attention. I don't know. Perhaps we'll see. Do you have any thoughts on that either way?
I actually like your idea. I think that might be the way to go in terms of reaching a great amount of people. But there's also a lot that's being written in the blogosphere where people are talking about it. And of course, most of it is going to be in French, but some of it will be in English. And I think that's another alternative way of learning about what's happening in the Congo.
Beatrice Gadabuki, thank you for being our guest today on MTSU on the Record. And thank you for your concern and your insight into this issue.
Thank you so much, Gina. It was really a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
MTSU on the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.